Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, April 27, 2023. The UN Refugee Agency is appealing to Sudan's neighboring countries to keep their doors open to families fleeing violence in Sudan.
The humanitarian impact of this crisis will be harsh. Before this crisis, Sudan hosted more than 1 million refugees and 3.7 million were internally displaced.
And an oil company evacuates Chinese and Indian nationals working on the border of Sudan and South Sudan.
Well, what I only know is the fear. People are fearing in Egypt because the crisis in Sudan is also attacking our people, or the people who are working in the oil field, such as the engineers. Most of the family are affected in Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, United States, Britain, and United Nations are among the nations and organizations trying to persuade the warring parties in Sudan to extend their 72-hour ceasefire, which ends tonight. The ceasefire has allowed thousands of people to flee conflict areas and to get food, water, and other supplies. The truce was the first to hold since fighting began on April 15 between the Sudan Armed Forces under the command of General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the Rapid Support Forces led by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, or Himiti. Today in Washington, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres met with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. They told journalists they are working closely on a number of world crises, including the violence in Sudan. Here is Secretary Blinken.
We're working very closely together to deal with the crisis in Sudan, hopefully working toward a more enduring ceasefire, cessation of hostilities, and helping put Sudan back on the track that it was on to civilian-led government, while dealing with, I think, an increasingly challenging humanitarian situation there.
Blinken said the U.S. also is working intensely on food security, climate change mitigation, and achieving development goals. Guterres said the support of the U.S. has been vital to many of the crises the U.N. is addressing, especially in the Sudan.
But I wanted to particularly to express my gratitude and appreciation for the cooperation we have had recently in Sudan. Both Secretary Blinken and myself were trying to broker ceasefires, but successive ceasefires, in both cases with some success, but not the success we would like to have. And I want to express my gratitude for the support that U.S. security officers have given to the important operation of the relocation that we did. A convoy of 1,200, both staff members of the UN, but also NGOs and different missions, from Khartoum to Port Sudan, in the middle of a very difficult situation.
Despite the ceasefire, people in Sudan report sporadic fighting around the country. The United Nations Refugee Agency is appealing to states neighboring conflict-affected Sudan to keep their borders open to people seeking safety and protection. The UNHCR warns another displacement crisis could further destabilize an already fragile region. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since fighting between the Sudanese army and paramilitary rapid support forces erupted April 15th, tens of thousands of Sudanese have been forced to leave their homes in fear of their lives. UNHCR spokeswoman Olga Serrado says the fighting looks set to trigger more displacement inside and outside the country. She says efforts are underway to scale up assistance for those fleeing across borders.
The humanitarian impact of this crisis will be harsh. Before this crisis, Sudan hosted more than 1 million refugees and 3.7 million were internally displaced. All UNHCR operations in Sudan's neighboring countries impacted by this new emergency already have existing large refugee and IDP populations and are also severely underfunded.
At least 20,000 Sudanese refugees reportedly have fled to Chad from Darfur, one of the regions in Sudan most affected by violence. Their arrival is placing enormous strain on the country's overstretched resources. Chad already shelters more than 400,000 Sudanese refugees from previous conflicts. Large numbers of Sudanese also reportedly are arriving in Egypt. So far, the UNHCR has registered at least 4,000 South Sudanese who have been forced to prematurely return home. The UNHCR representative in South Sudan, Marie-Hélène Vernet, says much larger numbers of unregistered people have been rushing through the northern borders with Sudan. Speaking from Juba, she says most of the South Sudanese refugees have fled the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, which is most affected by the fighting, and are returning home to a situation of deep uncertainty.
We 800,000 South Sudanese refugees in Sudan, an unknown number of South Sudanese still in Sudan. Many of them will be coming back to the five northern states in South Sudan that are already extremely fragile, a mixture of conflict, climate change, and food insecurity.
Vernet notes the five northern states depend on the pipeline from Sudan to get food and basic goods into their villages. This, she says, is raising concerns about the impact on communities if a large number of South Sudanese refugees return, particularly in areas of conflict or affected by climate change. She adds 75% of South Sudan's population of almost 12 million depends on humanitarian assistance. She warns a large, unplanned number of new returnees may destabilize already struggling local communities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on Sudan, a consortium of oil companies operating in the Higlich oil field in Unity State near the border with Sudan has evacuated its foreign workers to Juba this week due to the ongoing fighting in Khartoum and other cities in Sudan. The field manager of the Greater Pioneer Operating Company, or GPOC, says the foreign workers who operate in Higlich near the border with Sudan were evacuated as part of the company's safety measures. For VOA News, Lit Nyok Jok reports from Bantu, Unity State.
The GPOC field manager, Maya Tiop Aja, says some Chinese and Indian nationals were lifted to Juba this week. He said the consortium has no plan to evacuate South Sudanese oil workers who are working to ensure the oil production is not interrupted by the Sudan conflict.
It is a high policy of the company. It is a level of headquarters in Juba and level of federal government. It's not our plan. No any crisis at the border. Even the side of Sudan also, it is calm. No any problem there. We have been communicating with it from time to time.
The Minister for Information and Communication in UNISTE, David Guise, denied that foreign oil workers have been evacuated from UNISTE. Guise said the ongoing fighting in Sudan has not affected the oil production in the Lich area.
Well, what I only know is the fear. People are fearing in Lich because the crisis in Sudan is also attacking our people or the people who are working in the oil field. As I had the engineers, most of the family are affected in Sudan. So there is exactly a fear for the people who are working in the oil field that our neighboring country also can affect South Sudan.
Guys say the oil workers are grieved with anxiety due to the conflict in Sudan, adding that oil will continue to flow through Sudan pipeline, regardless of the fighting across city in Sudan.
Despite the challenges or the crisis which is affecting our people in Sudan, as for a moment, they still resume the duties. They are still operating in oil field in Unity State. We don't have such information that our people have been evacuated in Unity oil field.
It is not the first time GPOC has evacuated its staff from the oil field. The consortium has paused to evacuate its staff from Yunus State in 2013 when the fighting broke out in Juba and spread to other parts of the country, including Upper Nile and Yunus State. Last week, South Sudan Petroleum Minister Kang Pochul said the conflict in Sudan could affect South Sudan oil production. He said South Sudan relies on Sudan for export of her crude oil and importation of raw material used in the production of the crude oil. For VOA News, I'm Liel Nyaja in Bentiu, Unity.
Still on Sudan, a top official of the Nigerians in Diaspora Commission says about 5,000 Nigerians living in Sudan have registered with the country's embassy there. He says the evacuation of Nigerians have begun and that the majority of those evacuated are students. Abdulrahman Balgun is the spokesperson of the Nigerians in Diaspora Commission. He spoke by phone with reporter Mike Bonye in Abuja, Nigeria.
Well, the evacuation of Nigerians, especially students planted in Khartoum, Sudan, commenced late last night with transportation from Khartoum to Egypt by bus. And this is being supervised by the Nigerian embassy in Sudan, in Khartoum, as well as representative of National Emergency Element Agency, NEMA.
With the evacuation of Nigerians from Sudan on now, what about other Nigerians aside students who also live in Khartoum and who want to also leave the country? Have you been able to reach them, or have they contacted the embassy or contacted the Nigerians in the Diaspora Commission or Ministry of Foreign Affairs?
Yes, the Nigerians in Khartoum, our embassy there, what they have been doing in the last 1 week is to collate numbers, names, contacts of Nigerians living in Khartoum. And over 5,000 of them have been collated. Over 40 buses have been hired for the process and are paid for. You know, it's going to be in batches and it's...
So where are the meeting points for the Nigerians who travel by road? Is it the Chad border or the Egyptian border or the... Which are the places that they are supposed to come for them to be eventually evacuated by the Nigerian government?
Well, I don't know the particular spots, but I know they are moving from Khartoum and then to Egypt. So it's at the Egyptian border that they will meet and evacuate them. So I don't know the particular name in Egyptian border where, but they know it because the embassy is in close contact with them. They have a connection where they give information.
What about embassy officials? Any plans to also evacuate them or close down the mission there?
Well, definitely. Unlike other countries, it's not going to be a reverse order. Because it is our embassy that are coordinating this operation there, they will be the last to leave after they must have cleared ground for whoever wants to leave.
That's Abdulrahman Balogun, is the spokesperson of the Nigerians in Diaspora Commission. He was speaking with reporter Mike Bonye in Abuja, Nigeria. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese journalist is helping his compatriots stuck in Khartoum. Find out how after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A group of South Sudanese living in Khartoum have set up a South Sudanese emergency room to share information about the ongoing conflict and help their compatriots who are stuck or trying to move around for safety. The volunteer group also shares information to help South Sudanese who are trying to leave the country heading to the South Sudan border. Local authorities in Reng County of South Sudan's Upper Nile State confirmed the arrival of thousands of people who are fleeing the fighting in Khartoum, including South Sudanese, Sudanese, Eritrean, Kenyans, Ugandans, and Somali nationals. A Khartoum-based South Sudanese journalist, Bathumi Ayuel Dak, is one of the volunteers who came up with the emergency room initiative. He tells Nabil Biagio that the South Sudan embassy in Khartoum is doing very little to provide emergency services to its nationals stuck in the city.
The day this war erupted in Khartoum here, people were desperate. People were like no communication. People were like what to do. People were frustrated to communicate with their families in different areas within the Khartoum city. Oh, then we discussed this issue and we come up with an idea of let's build and set up an initiative that's called emergency room, that we can provide information for the families and see the situation in that area. And then we can follow up what happened to them in the areas during the fighting between the warring. It's a WhatsApp group now. And we found that is getting these objectives of that, why we established this group. And then our ideas was also call for those who in need. Like, for example, if there is some people just locked inside in the warring parties place, and that someone cannot reach there. So we can get his contact, and then we use the social media to try to call upon those who can help, who is around there, for example, to find a way for them to get out from the place that they're locked in. We succeed this idea, and then we get the result is positive, and we get some people outside from the areas.
What made you feel the need to do this when South Sudanese have an embassy in Khartoum? Did you see a gap? Or did you do it in connection with the embassy? Did you collaborate with them?
Actually, we tried to find out with the embassy if they have a plan for South Sudanese who are now locked inside here. What we learned, we just got someone who posted a post on Facebook. It's our embassy personnel is working with the embassy here in South Sudan. He was calling upon South Sudanese to stay calm, to stay in their places, to be safe. It's just like a post on Facebook. But there were not any official a statement from the embassy here that to let the people feel like they have someone who taking care of them. We found that they have no plan. They have no plan to. They have anything to do with South Sudanese here. And I think the embassy failed South Sudanese in Khartoum. This is the reality.
And what services have you provided through this volunteer group you set up so far?
We found that some people use this platform to get the right information that they can let them come out from that place. Also, we were thinking about knowing the information, for example, news about South Sudanese who have been like in this crossfire, and if there's someone affected by this fighting and some or somewhere else, so the families will not know if they are safe or what happened to them exactly. So the WhatsApp group give them a chance to communicate and the formation and the situation in the areas.
Yes, yes. The biggest operation was the evacuations, of course, you helped with. And I just had a quick question there. Banks are closed in Khartoum and across Sudan, and the usual channels of remitting money are not working. Dahab Shell, Western Union, etc. How are the families you're helping getting money? Because I know the bus ride to the border of South Sudan requires money to buy a ticket and other road trip necessities. How are you dealing with that? How are you helping in that regard?
Actually, let me put it very clear. The emergency room was not providing any kind of assistance in terms of money. This should be clear for all. And such as we was trying to just open the communication room for all. And I think I don't know if you went through this emergency room, we found that there are some people who initiate some initiatives that how to help South Sudanese in this area, raising issue of providing some assistance in terms of money. It was difficult during this 10 days in Khartoum here. The bank account was not working. So sometimes it's work at mid of night, but sometimes it's not working. And if you get someone to send you some credit on the account, you will not get a cash, that because people are using also the cash here.
That's Khartoum-based South Sudanese journalist Batoumi Ayuel Dak. He was speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Reports emerged this week that the Kremlin-linked Wagner group could be supplying weapons to one of the warring parties in the conflict in Sudan. Salim Solomon has the story from Washington.
New reports suggest that the Kremlin-backed mercenaries with the Wagner group in Sudan may have offered weapons to one of the two rival Sudanese generals. But as violence rages in the country, high-level U.S. officials have expressed concern. John Kirby, National Security Council Strategic Communications Coordinator, said the group's involvement will only worsen the situation.
Obviously, we don't want to see this conflict expand or broaden, and we certainly wouldn't want to see additional firepower brought to bear that will just continue the violence and continue to escalate the tensions.
Two generals are fighting for power. General Abdel Fattah Burhan, head of the armed forces, and General Mohamed Hamdan Dogolo or Hemeti, the leader of a paramilitary group known as the Rapid Support Forces. Hemeti traveled to Russia last year and has sought to win support from Wagner. Jacqueline Burns is a senior political analyst with RAND Corporation.
Hemeti and his Rapid Support Forces are largely in control of the major gold mining regions in Sudan and have very likely been complicit in gold smuggling for years. Thus, the Wagner group is siding with the party they think is most likely to be able to continue to secure these interests, particularly in opposition to any civilian-led government.
The Wagner group's history in Sudan dates back to the previous government of Omar al-Bashir. Wagner's leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, had a close relationship with former autocratic leader al-Bashir. After al-Bashir relinquished power due to a popular uprising, Wagner continued to have a close relationship with the Sudanese military, particularly the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces headed by Hemeti. It's a pattern analysts have seen before. Ben Dalton is a program manager at New America's Future Frontlines program, a Washington-based think tank.
The Wagner group does seem to engage with African countries on a pretty predictable sort of pattern. Normally, it starts with the cultivation of elites, or at least a subset of elites, and then that is followed up with a formal military technical agreement between the states. And this could be something like, you know, Russia will supply arms in exchange for concessions that allow them to do mining or other kinds of resource extraction.
Since the fighting began in April, there have been unconfirmed reports saying that the Wagner fighters are supporting the RSF and supplying them with weapons and armor. Russia sees Sudan as a strategic location with vast mineral wealth and are eager to help install a friendly leader, says Cameron Hansen with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
We've seen a lot in recent months about Russia's efforts to gain a port on the Red Sea in Sudan through an official military relationship. And they've signed other official military relationships with other countries in the region.
Wagner's involvement in other parts of the continent, like Libya, the Central African Republic, and Mali, has in many cases been problematic, says Dalton.
They've been associated with widespread atrocities. Everywhere they go, you see, you know, civilian deaths and various atrocities. And, you know, Russia's interests are in extracting the continent's resources so that it can strengthen its own position and build a web to resist sort of international sanctions. They don't really have the interests of Africans at heart.
And as the conflict rages, civilians continue to pay the price. Salem Solomon, VOA News.
The UN Food Agency, WFP, and the government of South Sudan have signed a 3-year memorandum of understanding for improving food security in the country. WFP's country director in South Sudan says the strategic plan for 2023-2025 allocates $3.7 billion towards emergency food assistance for 4 million people across the country. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Bor.
Gemma Snowden, the head of communication for WFP in South Sudan, says WFP is committed to help South Sudanese fight hunger.
The World Food Programme has signed a letter of understanding with the government of South Sudan for the joint implementation of the WFP country strategic plan for 2023 through 2025.
Snowden says the 3-year strategic plan worth $3.7 million is meant to improve food security across South Sudan. She says the money will be used to provide emergency humanitarian assistance to South Sudanese to become self-reliant.
This funding will be used for WFP programs, which will lay the foundations for our role as food assistance provider to evolve as government institutions take increasing ownership and respond to the needs of vulnerable population groups.
Speaking to reporters in Juba Wednesday after a signing ceremony, Mary Helen McCrotty, the WFP director in South Sudan, said the strategic plan for 2023-2025 targets 4 million people who are facing food insecurity across the country.
Our new country strategic plan, which we are signing for today, the LOU, it sets out a vision to address entrenched inequity and isolation by intentionally leveraging all our programs to build interconnected and peaceful communities with the goal of leaving no one behind and achieving zero hunger in South Sudan.
South Sudan's acting foreign minister, Deng Dao Ding, said the agreement will enable WFP to support development projects in South Sudan.
All the $3 billion reflected in the budget of the Republic of South Sudan as the contribution, you know, from the international partners to our budget. And of course, you will manage within the next 3 years so that we don't duplicate the activities.
Dow says his government will coordinate with WFP to ensure the smooth implementation of the strategic plan. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. When I leave you with Abie Jaspan and the song Samira. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Holly Kepa, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.